أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين، أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد. وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين، لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين. First, I'd like to start by extending my condolences on the anniversary of the holy month of Muharram, and as we near the day of Ashura. Inshallah, we'll spend 1 or 2 minutes in regards to issues related to Ahkam al-Fiqh, and then we'll continue the discussion that we left off last night. Inshallah, today's issues will be in regards to prayer and salat. We know that a certain number of things will invalidate the prayers, and we won't list all of them, but one or two I'd like to touch on. One of the elements and one item which will invalidate one's prayer is if an individual speaks during the prayer. Now, this can have a number of forms. The individual who is praying can either speak purposefully, or they can have spoken accidentally. If a person speaks in their prayers accidentally, then the prayer is okay and the prayer is accepted, but the individual needs to perform the 2 sajdas after the prayer for forgetting and performing this action, sajda sahw, after the prayer is done. If the person speaks in their prayer intentionally, this is in a number of forms. If it's one word or one letter, and the individual who is saying it, that means the person who is praying, is making reference to the meaning. For example, if you just say I or me while you're praying, and you're trying to really, you're using the meaning of the word, this invalidates the prayer. Even if it's one letter, like in Arabic, we have certain words that are one letter, like qih. Qih is one letter and is also a word. It's an order. So if an individual is saying that and he means to say it with its meaning, then it invalidates a prayer. If it's two letter, if it's one letter and the individual is not, they say it but they don't mean it's, the meaning is not really being used here, they say it for you to finish the prayers and then redo them. And if it's more than one word or more than 2 words or more than a few letters and the person is speaking on purpose, then obviously the prayer is void, they need to redo the prayer. The next is for an individual who laughs. Laughing is something that, again, invalidates the prayer. If it's done, again, accidentally, and the prayer is valid, they just need to perform the sajdas afterwards. If it's on purpose, if the laughing is done without sound, meaning if the individual is smiling, that doesn't invalidate the prayer. But if a person laughs with sound, if it's their fault, then the prayer is void, invalid, they need to redo it. They say in the case that one begins to laugh, but it really isn't their fault in the sense that someone else initiates or does something that results in them laughing, the scholars say that in this case, you finish the prayer and you redo them. And the final is the concept of crying and weeping. That is another element that will invalidate the prayers. If this is done for the love of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, then not only does it not invalidate the prayer, but it's also mustahab, it's recommended. If someone was to cry in their prayers out of the fear of God, then that is recommended. It doesn't void the prayer is fine. But if it's done out of the fear of the dunya, or anything other than the fear of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, again, if it's done accidentally or not on purpose, then it doesn't invalidate. If it's done on purpose, and it has sound to it, then it invalidates the prayer. And if it's done on purpose and no sound is in it, then again, the scholars say that one should finish their prayer and then redo it. So these are 3 issues in regards to things that invalidate the prayer. And inshallah, in the coming nights, we'll continue to make reference to some of the issues that we tend to hear less about or are common but are less heard of. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
So we stated last night that And in previous lectures, that our goal was to understand the one statement that every day is Ashura and every line is Karbala. So that is our goal, and we're inshallah making progress in understanding that. Last night we stated that there were a number of social elements that the enemies of Islam and the Munafiqeen, especially Muawiyah, was able to capitalize on and also help shape society to move in that direction to be able to reach his goals, which was eliminating the true form of Islam and anyone that stood up against him. We stated that the three main social elements were that there was a lack of Islamic knowledge and understanding in the Muslim world. The second was that there was a culture that was centered around the tribe and for one to follow and have pride in regards to his tribe. And the third was that the individuals of that time, they lacked iman and faith and belief in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And because of these things, these individuals were able to capitalize on these weaknesses and move towards achieving their own goals, which was something other than what Islam is itself, because we said these individuals are hypocrites, and a hypocrite, the definition of a hypocrite is one that portrays something, some image, some support, but in reality, in his heart, he has another goal, and he has another belief. So these were the three elements, inshallah. In the coming nights, maybe from tomorrow, we will break down a few of these and really extract and pay a little more attention on some of the finer facts in regards to these. But today we want to get into what elements was Muawiyah especially and the enemies of Islam able to use to be able to achieve their goals. Meaning, how were they able to instill a lack of knowledge and understanding, or how were they able to develop a false understanding of what Islam really is? How are they able to capitalize on this tribal-centered culture, and how are they able to gain power and approval from the Muslim Ummah? Because we stated that the individuals who stood up against the movement of Imam Hussein and those who participated actively or not actively in the martyrdom of the Holy Imam and his family were all Muslims. So no outside help was used, and no outside help was wanted. Rather, they knew that if they wanted to succeed with this goal, it had to come from the Muslim community and the Muslim Ummah and the Muslim world. So what tools were used? The tools that Muawiyah used were not new tools. They weren't new ways of going about doing something. He didn't innovate, or he didn't create or invent a new means of being able to manipulate people and society. Rather, he used tools and methods that are very common both then and today, and will continue to exist in the history of mankind. The first of these is that he was able to spread his message and stop the message of his opposition, which was the message of the Holy Prophet and the Holy Imams, by the media and by advertising and speaking about and preaching his views. Now the media in those days wasn't like the media that exists today. Today's media is TV, internet, things of that nature. But we know that in that time, there was no internet, there was no TV, there was no Facebook, no Twitter, nothing like that. So he wasn't preaching his message through the TV and the internet. Rather, he was using the sources available to him then. The media then was what? Was the khutaba, the people who would speak on the minbar, on the pulpits, and also individuals who would write poetry and that were artists. In those days, art and poetry was very respected and had a very important role in society. Now this individual, when he wanted to get his message across, what he would do is that he would buy and pay off poets to write poetry that promoted his image and the image of his movement. Hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of poets were paid off to fabricate poetry that made this man look good. scholars or so-called scholars and speakers were paid off to say things that made this man look good and approved of his way of Islam and his way of rule. And at the same time, they were paid to help destroy the image of the Imams in the Ahlul Bayt. We know that after the death of the Holy Prophet, when the Khulafa got into power, around the Muslim world, the name of Ali ibn Abi Talib was brought in the minbars and brought in the speeches, but when they brought his name, it wasn't to speak of his stature and of how much the Holy Prophet loved him and what he had said in regards to his personality. Rather, when his name was brought, he was cursed. Think of this being done in thousands and thousands of cities across the Muslim world. And constantly, everywhere a person would sit and listen to a speech, somewhere in the speech, this issue would rise. About cursing Imam Ali alayhi salam, and with that, his children and anyone who followed in his footsteps. Another method was that Muawiyah used Qaris to be able to spread his message. Now when we hear Qari today, typically what comes to mind is an individual who recites Qur'an beautifully. Most of us when we hear Qari, we think of someone like Abdul Basit, or Mishawi, or someone of that nature. Qari is someone who recites the Qur'an beautifully. But Qari, one of the meanings of an individual is the individual who does the tafsir of the Holy Qur'an. Someone who explains the teachings of the Holy Qur'an. You can say it is equivalent to that of a mufassir. So he paid off these individuals to do tafsir of the Holy Qur'an, which would again approve of his message and approve of him. So these new Muslims that we said that Islam was growing rapidly, these new Muslims, when they sat on, they sat in the majalis and they went to the masjid, all they would hear were the verses of the Holy Qur'an and a hadith of the Holy Prophet, but rather all of these were fabricated, all of these were falsified in helping to promote a message that was contradictory to Islam itself. But someone who's new to a religion doesn't know better. Like we said it last night. How is someone who is just learning the alphabet and the ABCs of a religion going to stand up to a scholar and tell him your interpretation of a certain verse in the Holy Quran is incorrect? That doesn't even cross the person's mind. And so long as this teaching is done consistently, and especially if it's done at a young age, then the person will grow up with the mentality of that in which he is fed. We want to apply the teachings to today. What role does the media play in today's world? The media is only a method and a means of helping distribute a message. It's only a tool. Itself, it has no value. Rather, it plays the role of a tool. Whatever is being put into the system and now it's being broadcasted, that is what the people will hear. In today's world, what is being broadcasted in the media? What's being broadcasted is in support of today's dictators, whether in the classical form of dictatorship or in the new age form of dictatorship, which they are portrayed as good individuals, but also they have an agenda to cause disruption in the world and to cause injustices to occur. That's the role that today's media is pushing. Either it's pushing that directly, or it's using the media to keep our minds busy with things that are not important. And if you pay attention, if you study this, the impact that the media has and is having and will have, you'll understand that they target the youth. In what sense? If they're able to plant a seed in a young person's mind and heart at a young age, and they constantly, they help this grow, they nourish it. How? They give it water and sunlight. They keep feeding this image with the media in different forms. And all of them, their goal is to help approve and support of this initial message. All of the major TV stations and radio stations that we have, are not a majority of them propagating the same message? If Channel 4 is saying one thing, Channel 7 is saying exactly the same thing. If so-and-so politician is saying something, the other is saying the exact same thing. It might be in different forms, but at the end of the day, they are really propagating the same message. If one country says one thing, then all of his supporters will be saying the same thing. Why? It's not because he hadn't said it in the first place. It's not because the first person made a mistake in delivering the message. Rather, the point is for this message to be constantly fed to the people. And if it's done properly, and if it's done at a young age, then as this person grows, this becomes part of their personality. And that false information that was being fed to them now becomes truth in their eyes. That if you were to approach one and tell them, listen, this individual is not the man you think he is. This society is not the society that you think it is. There are certain things being done that are in contradiction to what you've been told. The person will dismiss your allegation. Why? Because the seed has been planted in the individual and it has grown and flourished. And now it's bearing its fruits. In what sense? In the sense that when someone says, or when a person says, or when a society says, or when a government says, this needs to be done, and for this reason, everyone supports. Are we making this connection? When Muawiyah stands and says that Hussein ibn Ali alayhi salam is the enemy of Islam, and he needs to be eliminated. These new Muslims that have been fed this false information, not only do they not stand up to reject his proposal, rather, they dedicate their lives to join the armies of him and give their lives to eliminate this man. It doesn't get more practical than this in today's world. It can't get more practical than this. One cannot see these things and read these things and not say that today is Ashura. And here and everywhere is Karbala. When we hear these things, then we can identify who are the Husseins in today's society, who are the companions of Hussein, who are Husseini, and who are the Yazids, who are the Muawiyahs, who are the Ibn Ziyads. These are all here so we can identify them in today's world. So the first tool that this individual was able to use was that of the media. And it is a very powerful tool. Why? Because it reaches the masses. If you can speak to 1 million people at one time, how effective is that in spreading your message? Rather than to speak to each person individually. If you have this over the whole Muslim world, and everyone is hearing one thing, and it's in support of what you're saying. Inshallah, in the coming nights, we will speak about how they use the elements and the teachings of Islam and spread them, and how that helps shape the people of the minds of the people into thinking that what they were doing was Islamic. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala. So that's the first element and tool that they used, the media, and that took care of most of the people. The majority of the people that supported the movement of this man were influenced by the media. Now, this individual is using tools to attain his goal. When the first tool doesn't work, he uses the next one. For people who are not influenced by the media, or could not be influenced by the media, the next tool that this man used was that of bribery. And to pay off individuals and to buy them, buy their support and loyalty. See, when a man of power knows that your movement is something that you will gain and profit from, he knows that if he has a say in stopping you or disrupting your movement, and he has money, then your goal is to stand up and show some opposition so that you will be able to gain from it as well. Politicians, the reason why they are not influenced by the media is because they know what's going on. But if you give them a little money, then everything's fine. So this was the second tool that Muawiyah used. Who did he bribe off? The most influential people in the Muslim world. And we'll give examples. One example is that Muawiyah ordered the governor of Medina. I'm sorry, the governor of Kufa. The Wali of Kufa, his name was Mughirah ibn Shu'bah. He told him and commanded him to gather a group of people, a group of influential people from Kufa, send them to Sham, Syria, where he was, and have them ask him, as the ruler of the Muslim world, to name and announce the successorship of his son Yazid. See, the command is coming from Muawiyah himself. So what did this person do? He went in Kufa, he gathered 40 influential people, the heads of the city. And he sent them towards Sham. One day when Muawiyah was speaking, either during the speech or after the speech, these individuals began to speak with him. They said, "Ya Amir al-Mu'mineen," because he was accepted as the Khalifa of the time, as the leader of the time. They told him that, "Why are you delaying things? What is it that you are waiting for? Why are you keeping the Muslim world in a state that they don't know what's going to happen? We don't know what will happen tomorrow. We cannot read and we don't know what will happen in the future. Go ahead and announce the successorship of your son for him to be the next Khalifa after you. So we can be at peace to know that after you there is another person, which is your son Yazid." So Muawiyah, playing the part, said, "Interesting. This is your request, and this is the request of the people of Kufa, because as heads of the city and the heads of a society, when they are distributing a message and when they are taking a message and delivering it, that means they're speaking on behalf of the people. When someone is elected to be your leader and to represent you, when he says something, then by the books he's supposed to be the voice of the people. So, he said, interesting. This is the request of the people of Kufa. Let me think about it, and I'll let you know later on what decision I've come to." This is all being played out. It's a play. It's all been scripted. So, the leader of these 40 individuals was who? Was the son of Mughirah. His name was Urwa. A man approached this Urwa, and he said that, "How much did this man pay? How much did your father pay for the religion of these 40 people?" Because he knew they're all had all been bribed and bought. He said, "How much?" He said, 30,000 dirhams for all of them to make this request and follow. He said, "They sold their religion for a small price. Their religion was cheap to them. That means you only had to pay 30,000 and all of them helped propagate this message." So there were individuals that were bought off and bribed with money to help support this message. Now, that's one group of people. There were people who were bribed to help promote. There were also individuals who were bribed and given money not to promote the message, but rather to just stay silent and be quiet and not to oppose the movement of Muawiyah and his followers. Just to be quiet. He buys their silence. We have so many examples of influential people that were bought off and they stayed silent. One example is that of Abdullah ibn Umar. This person, his silence or support was so influential to them, and at the same time, with his support, they can help destroy the Muslim world. Now one will ask, this individual, it's important to know that he did not accept the fact that Yazid should become the next Khalifa. He was opposed to this notion. That the next individual, the successor of Muawiyah, should be Yazid. He was opposed to that. When someone is opposed to it, then you have to bribe them. Someone already accepts it, there's no reason to bribe. So he was opposed to this fact. The next Khalifa should not be Yazid, it should be someone else. So why is he so important? Why is he such an influential figure? For three reasons. One is because his image in society was an image of a good Muslim, a pious practicing Muslim, with taqwa, with piety, everything. So when people saw him, they saw a good Muslim. The second reason, because of this fact that he was portrayed and seen as a good Muslim, this man had become a role model in his surroundings. In the Muslim world, this man was a role model. So people looked up to him. And the third reason was because of his father, people respected him. This is why this man is so influential. Why his support is necessary to be able to help spread this message. So they bribed him. How much? 100,000 dirhams. 100,000 dirhams was given to him, not to promote the message, but rather just to say, quiet. And when he accepted and kept his silence to the last days of his life, this itself is promoting the message. Why? Because when someone is doing something, and if it's wrong, Islamically, what responsibility do you have? To stand up against him. This is something we'll get to inshallah in the later nights. One of our responsibilities as Muslims is to promote the good, enjoin the good, and forbid the evil. Forbid the evil. Amr al-ma'ruf wa nahi anil munkar. So if someone is doing something wrong, as a Muslim you're responsible towards stopping them. So staying silent is really a sign and a means of showing that you approve of what he's doing. Look at the manipulation. If someone's smart, politician smart, he's able to understand these things. He knows these things. He doesn't need necessarily every influential figure to promote his message directly. So that was one individual. The second was of Mundhir ibn Zubayr, the son of Zubayr. This individual is also opposed to the successorship of Yazid. So what happened here? He was also paid 100,000 dirhams to keep silent. Now this man was a little smarter than Abdullah ibn Umar. Why? He took the money and he stayed silent for a while. But after that he spoke the truth. He spoke the truth and told people of the true nature of Yazid. What did he say? He said that indeed Yazid sent me 100,000 dirhams. But this does not mean I won't speak the truth. I swear by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that indeed he drinks wine and alcohol and does not pray. So he took the money, but also when people asked him, he would tell them what kind of nature Yazid has. But the important point is here. With that, he did not oppose him and did not stand up to his movement. That's why the money was paid. And that's why he was kept silent. He may have told people that yes, Yazid doesn't pray and he drinks. But a lot of the people in Sham already knew that. The people of Syria knew what kind of man this person was. The point was to be able to gain the support of other individuals that don't really know the true nature of this person. So he stayed silent and he did not oppose. So those were examples of individuals that were bribed and paid off. And the examples are numerous. If you read history, you'll see example after example after example of people who held position in society. They were paid and bought off to keep quiet. Again, the link towards today's world. Which society can you find that their leaders and politicians are not paid off to keep quiet and help promote a message that is in the benefit of either them or of a higher power? I can't put a finger on a country that may do that. Corruption exists everywhere. And in the Muslim world, unfortunately. In the Muslim world, which we are individuals who are promoting this message, there's just as much corruption there as there is in non-Muslim countries. So this link is very clear as to the tools that were used for individuals to be able to gain support of society. and manipulate that in their own means and for their own benefits. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. So, that was the second one. So, you either use the media to gain the support of people, or you pay them for them to support and spread your message, or to keep quiet. For people who don't help you and don't follow you and are not influenced with these two tools, there is a third tool that individuals resort to. And that is of violence and threats. When you ask someone nicely that you try to convince them to support your cause, and you have your eyes set on becoming successful, first you speak with them. Then if he doesn't accept when you speak, then you try to offer him some money. And if he still doesn't accept your money, what other choice do you have than to resort to threats and to violence? Because your goal is to carry out your mission. So this person and the munafiqeen had their eyes set and their goals set, that they were going to hijack the Muslim world and use it for their benefits. We've already established that. So what role did this play? And which individuals were targeted? And which individuals were killed and eliminated? We'll only name a few, but really they are very influential and effective. The first of them is Imam Hassan alayhi salam. Imam Hassan alayhi salam, we know that could not be influenced by the teachings that these individuals are preaching. Why? The grandson of the Holy Prophet. He is the true mufassir of the Holy Quran, so he understands what right and wrong is. No so-called scholar can come and try to debate with Imam Hassan alayhi salam and tell him that Muawiyah is a just individual, Yazid is a just individual, and you should be of support in his cause. That wasn't going to happen. And because of his piety, because of his taqwa and God consciousness, he couldn't be paid off. So it was essential for him to be eliminated. Now why was it? Because both Imam al-Hassan and Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, they were both very well-known figures in Medina. They were very well-respected. Because they had seen these two individuals grow up. They had heard the sayings of the Holy Prophet in regards to both of them. When the Holy Prophet states that the Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein are the leaders and the masters of the youth of heaven. Al Hassan and Al Hussein say they shall be Ahlul Jannah. The people of Medina had heard these hadith. They had heard the Holy Prophet say that Hussein is from me and I am from Hussein. Hussein al Minni wa Amin Hussein. When people have heard this, they know what kind of people they are. So this was a problem for Muawiyah and for his son Yazid. That was the first reason. The second reason was because during the life of Imam al-Hassan, and we'll explain this, Imam al-Hassan and Muawiyah made a peace treaty, and in that treaty they had a contract that certain things need to be upheld. One of the statements in that peace treaty and in that contract and agreement was that Muawiyah, after him, after his khilafah, after he dies, he is not allowed to announce a successor, and that the khilafah and the leadership should go to Imam al-Hassan. So these are two reasons. And this issue of this peace treaty and this statement is very well documented in our Islamic sources. Both the Shia sources and the Sunni sources. We will narrate them from the Sunni sources so you can get an understanding as to what's being said. For example, Ibn Hajar al-Asqalani narrates this hadith from Imam al-Hassan with strong sources. Because as inshallah we'll speak about hadith and their role and their importance, the source of a hadith is very important. If you were to quote a hadith and the hadith is weak, it doesn't really hold much weight. But if it's a strong hadith, then it's a different story. So this individual is narrating this hadith from Imam al-Hassan with a strong source. He's saying that Imam Hassan alayhi salam stated, indeed Muawiyah and I had made an agreement that after his khilafah, I would be the khalifa of the Muslim world. So we know that after the martyrdom of Imam Ali alayhi salam, and Muawiyah was khalifa, Imam al-Hasan, with an army, left Kufa to fight with Muawiyah. Muawiyah also, he gathered an army and left for battle with Imam al-Hasan. We don't have time to get into the details of what happened, but briefly what happened was, when they had, both armies had prepared for battle, Muawiyah was able to bribe, was able to influence some major figures in the army of Imam al-Hasan. He paid them money and they all abandoned the Holy Imam. So the Holy Imam had no choice but to make peace. In making peace, the Imam knew that he couldn't make peace with this man without any conditions. So he said certain conditions need to be set. And I urge all of us to read this peace treaty that was created by Imam al-Hasan with Muawiyah. To read it and see what elements existed in the peace treaty and whether they were upheld or not. We're going to speak about one of them, but there are a number of them. It's a good idea to read this document and study the document. One of the statements we said was that the Khilafah was to return to Imam Hassan alayhi salam after his death and no successor should be announced. So, with this issue in mind, what choice did Muawiyah have other than to eliminate the Holy Imam? Other than to murder Imam al-Hasan alayhi salam? Because in the treaty, after him, Yazid played no part, and if the Holy Imam came into power, what would have happened? All of the work that they had done thus far would be eliminated. Why? Because this man, the son of Imam Ali alayhi salam, would follow in the footsteps of his father and try to instill and re-establish society with true Islam, which is justice for all, peace for all. So he knew that if this man came into power, we would have a problem. I wouldn't be able to reach the goal that I have. So he said, the only way for me to be successful is to kill this man. Now how did he go about doing this? Again, the money comes into play. He paid and bribed the wife of the Holy Imam to poison him. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. So, this issue is also very well narrated and documented in Islamic sources and the Sunni sources especially. I'm quoting Zamakhshari, he narrates that Muawiyah gave Ju'da, the daughter of Ashab ibn Ghais. This is the wife of Imam al-Hasan. Muawiyah gave her 100,000 dirhams and he also promised her that she would marry Yazid, the marriage with Yazid. That was also promised. These two things, money and the marriage. If she was to poison Imam al-Hasan. So she goes about poisoning the Holy Imam and the Holy Imam is martyred. And we all know the events that transpired after. After she did this, the money was collected. But Muawiyah did not allow her to marry Yazid. When she asked, he said, this was part of our agreement. Why will you not let me marry this man? He said that, I fear what you did with your husband, Imam Hassan alayhi salam, you'll do with my son Yazid. So I won't allow you to marry him. Look at the hypocrisy. So that was the first individual that Muawiyah eliminated through violence and threats. Another individual was Sa'd ibn Abi Waqqas. Now this person was also very, very influential in the Muslim world. And he also had hate for Muawiyah. And his hate did not originate out of the love of the Ahlul Bayt. He also didn't have a good relationship with Imam Ali alayhi salam. His hate of Muawiyah wasn't out of the love of the Ahlul Bayt. He hated both. So since he didn't have respect for Muawiyah, there was no way that he was going to have respect for his son and allow for his son to become the next Khalifa. So he wasn't able to bribe him, he also had to eliminate him. How did he go about doing that? We know that the brothers of Ahl Sunnah, they regard this man, Sa'd ibn Abi Waqqas, as one of the 10 individuals that are those that will enter the paradise. There is a famous hadith that is narrated in the books of the Sunni sources that say that this man is of 10 people that the Holy Prophet has stated they will enter heaven in paradise. So it's regarded as a respected person because of this hadith. And when we analyze and study the hadith, it becomes clear that the hadith was fabricated and it's false. So, and he was also an individual that during the time of the second Khalifa, to appoint the third Khalifa, he had created a council of six individuals for them to choose the next Khalifa. So this man was part of the council. And during the vote, this man did not support Imam Ali alayhi salam. So it goes to show that not only did he not have support for the Ahlul Bayt, he also didn't have support for Muawiyah. With that said, when Muawiyah entered Medina, the heads of state and the important people of the city, they went to see him. Of these people was Sa'ad ibn Abi Waqqas. He went to see Muawiyah. When he entered the room, out of respect, Muawiyah rose and accepted him and sat him next to himself. This is a sign of respect. When someone who is well-respected enters a room or a majlis, typically what they do is the most respected person there brings them and sits them next to them. So he sat him next to himself and they began to speak and talk. Muawiyah asked him a question. He said, "Why don't you curse Abu Turab?" Meaning Imam Ali alayhi salam. Everyone is doing it. It's being done all across the Muslim world. Why do you not curse him? This was a tool and a method that Muawiyah was propagating. He said that, "I will not curse Abu Turab because I have heard the Holy Prophet on a number of occasions say certain things about this man, and until those ahadith and those sayings and narrations are in my head and in my mind, I will not curse this individual." Meaning what? He had heard the hadith and the truth as to the real personality of the Holy Imam. And he knows what stature he holds, and for an individual to curse him, what will happen? So he said, "I won't curse him until the day that I remember these things, I will not curse Abu Turab." Muawiyah became upset. And angered, he got up and he left the majlis. After that, after he left the majlis, he was angered because of what Sa'd ibn Abi Waqqas said. He said, "Okay, this man doesn't like me, and he won't help propagate my message, so I have to eliminate him." And just like he martyred Imam al-Hasan alayhi salam, he also killed him through poison. He poisoned him and he died. So that's another example. A third example is that of Abdul Rahman, the son of Abu Bakr, and the brother of Aisha. We're bringing examples. There are a number of examples. We're bringing examples that show individuals who are more, you can say, well known, or individuals who are more well documented and effective in the culture. And there are many, many examples. The point of these lectures is not to cover everything, rather to give us an introduction and an understanding as to what happened, and especially if we want to continue to study these, which we should. We have a guide as to how things happen and where we're able to reference them. So another individual who was against the message and against the idea of Yazid becoming the Khalifa was this individual, Abdul Rahman, son of Abu Bakr. Now, first, Muawiyah tried to bribe him, buying off just like he did everyone else. He sent him 100,000 dirhams, and he said that, "You know, with this money, I ask you to stay silent and to help support my message and my cause." He responded by saying, "I will not sell my religion and my faith for this dunya." Meaning he rejected his money. So that was one event that took place. Also, during one of the speeches, the governor of Medina, the wali of Medina, Marwan, he was giving a speech. And in his speech he said that your Amir al-Mu'mineen, Muawiyah, has chosen and announced his son Yazid to be his successor and the next Khalifa of the Muslim world. So, this Abdul Rahman, he rose and he said this, "Oh Marwan, both you and Yazid are liars. Neither of you want any good for the community and the ummah of the Holy Prophet. Rather, all you are looking for is power and position, and for you to be the leaders of this nation. And you're trying to instill a system of inheritance, in the sense that when one of you dies or passes away, one of your sons or someone from your tribe will come and retain the khalifa and become the khalifa. So what happened when he said this? The guards came, they arrested him, and they escorted him outside of the majlis. Soon after that, this individual was found dead. Now what's interesting, I'd like to make a link to the talk we had on the second night. We spoke about the importance of history and what role it plays in distortions that exist. It's interesting to see when you study this this event in regards to what Abdul Rahman did and what Muawiyah did in response to that, you'll see that in Sunni sources they state this clearly. But in some sources, there's distortion. In what sense? There's a hadith in Bukhari that speaks about this event exactly. They said that when Marwan was giving the speech, and he said that Muawiyah, as your Amir, has chosen Yazid to be his successor, a man, Abdul Rahman, stood up and said something. In Bukhari doesn't quote and narrate what Abdul Rahman said. Why? Remember the issue that we spoke about in regards to being biased when narrating something. We said a historian sometimes, he picks and chooses what he narrates because he has a certain love or he has a certain bias in regards to an individual. If Bukhari was to quote and narrate what Abdul Rahman said, what do you think would happen? Abdul Rahman, the son of Abu Bakr, the brother of Aisha, standing up against the governor of Medina and saying that you and Muawiyah are liars. This individual doesn't want this to be narrated and people reading it. So what he does is, he doesn't quote this and narrate this in the hadith. He says that he rose up and he said something happened. And soon after, this individual is found dead. And again, they refute the fact that Muawiyah had killed this man. But in other sources, you can see that this is very clear. For example, Tabari, which is a very famous historian, he very clearly states that Muawiyah publicly and very clearly has been narrated to have said that he will kill Abdul Rahman because of these things. So when these individuals saw that they were not able to bribe and they were not able to influence through the media and their teachings, they resulted in eliminating and killing them and using violence. Again, since our goal is to be able to understand that every day is Ashura and every land is Karbala, just take these three elements and these three tools and again apply it to what exists today in our lives. Look at how many people have been killed, whether we know about it or not, because they stand up against an injustice. Yes, maybe the nightly news won't talk about these things, but coming from other cultures, we know of people who stand up against a power, stand up against a dictatorship, and put their lives on the line and give their lives for the value of justice and equality. We are still giving martyrs day by day because we have Yazidis that exist in today's world, and they, out of their hearts and out of either being Muslim or non-Muslim, out of this fitrah and out of this nature of humans, they rise and they stand up against injustice. And they are killed because of that. We are all, inshallah, here to be able to adopt and establish a Husseini-like personality in our lives. We need to understand that as a follower of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, it is our duty and obligation to stand up against injustice. What is the point for us to come and say we are followers of Imam Hussein and we support his message, but we won't take the first step in trying to emulate and support the message? Yes, let's start small, but again, it should be proactive and progressive. Even small injustices that you see, make this a habit if it's not already, to make sure that you stand up and you say or do something in regards to it. The problems we have in today's world is because enough people are not standing up against injustice. For those who know, like us, we are responsible towards doing that. And we said in the first night, the reason why we have these majalis, and the reason why we uphold this message, the reason why this message continues to live in today's world, is because of this concept of social justice. And we are responsible as those who know what the Holy Imam stood for, to help spread and propagate this message. So inshallah, we ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to help us live a Husseini-like lifestyle, and to help promote the messages of the Holy Imam, which was social justice, even if it leads to our death and destruction in this world, which we know is nothing in regards to the eternal life that awaits us. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Please dim the lights, inshallah, we'll do musibah for a few minutes. Allahumma salli ala محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم لا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم يا أبا عبد الله يا حسين ابن علي أيها الشهيد يا ابن رسول الله يا حجة الله على خلقه يا سيدنا ومولانا إنا توجهنا واستشفعنا وتوسلنا بك إلى الله وقدمناك بين يدي حاجاتنا يا وجيهان عنا الله اشفع لنا عنا الله يا وجيهان عنا الله اشفع لنا يا أبا عبد الله أو حسين My only wish in life is to be of your followers and of your companions and to give my life for you يا حسين And I wish I was there in Karbala to support you and give my life for you and your family يا ليتني كنت معكم فافوز فوزا عظيما But when I look to myself, يا حسين I become saddened and embarrassed And I fear that I may not have been on your side If I was there in Karbala Why is this? Because when I compare myself to your followers and companions I see Abbas, I see Qasim I see Ali al-Akbar, and I look to myself and I feel embarrassed as to who I am and what I do. But ya Hussein, there is one companion which gives me hope. When the Imam first met Hur, Hur was leading the army and the opposition with 1,000 soldiers. The Imam asked Hur, قال الحسين عليه السلام الأنام علينا أو حور are you with us or are you against us فقال بل عليك يا عبا عبد الله I am against you أو حسين the imam then responded فقال الحسين لا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم يا حسين I know every day when you ask me are you with me or are you against me with my action يا حسين how do I respond I say that I am against you يا أبا عبد الله when I see the halal and the haram, and when I choose to do the haram and I upset you, all I can think of is you seeing me and saying, La hawla wa la quwwata illa billahi al-ali al-azim. Ya Hussein, Ya Abba Abdullah. But when the battle began in Karbala on the day of Ashura, and after a few of the companions of the Holy Imam became shaheed, a revolution began in the heart of Hur. When he heard you, O Imam, ask for support. Ama min mughithin yughathuna liwajhi Allah. Ama min dhabin yadhubbu an harami Rasulillah. When Hur heard this statement from the Holy Imam, he began to think and reflect. He said that I find myself in the state that I am between heaven and hell. He said, I know I have to join Hussein alayhi salam, for if I follow these individuals and if I martyr him, my place will be the hellfire. Hur then began to wander. Some soldiers saw him following and starting to go to the camp of Hussein so that they wouldn't attack him. Hur would ask them, have you fed your horses today with water? And each of them responded, no. So every person Hur would go to, they would all leave his side, to the fact that one of the soldiers of the army of Yazid said that, Hur, I've never seen you in this state. If anyone would ask me who is the most and strongest fighter in all of the lands, I would say it is you. But I see you in a state that, Hur, you are weak, you are shaking, your head is down. Hur began to walk to the army and to the camp of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. He felt embarrassed, he felt ashamed. With his head down, he approached the camp of the Holy Imam. As he came, no one was there to accept him. And every time someone saw him, they turned their heads because of what he had done before. But there was one man there to accept Hur. Imam Hussein alayhi salam stood there and said, welcome, O Hur. Welcome to our camp and our support. Hur said, Ya Hussein, I am the same person that when you had first arrived, I did not allow you to return to Medina, and I forced you upon this land. Will Allah forgive me for my sins? Imam Hussein replied, قال الحسين نعم يتوب الله عليك. Yes, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will forgive you of your sins. Ya Hussein, Ya Hussein, I'm here today to say that I have done bad. I know I have upset you. I know I have saddened your heart and the heart of your followers. I know I have saddened the heart of your grandfather, Rasulullah. I know I have saddened the heart of your mother, Fatima. But I'm here to say, Ya Hussein, accept me in your camp. Accept me as your follower. Accept me as a shaheed in your way. Hur then said to the Imam, Ya Hussein, allow me to be the first martyr in your path and in your way. The Imam first said, come down from your horse, Hur. You are our guest now. Come and stay with us for a while and regain your strength. In some narrations we hear that Hur asked the Holy Imam, may I approach the camp of the women and of the children so that I may apologize for my actions. Hur went to the camp where Zainab was and where the children were. He said, Ya Zainab, O women, O children, will you forgive me for what I have done? After Hur said this, they were all affected and influenced, and they said, Ya Hur, we forgive you. And they said that someone came to Hur and told them, Ya Hur, Zainab sends her regards and is pleased with you. Ya Abba Abdullah, I am here to gain your acceptance. And I'm here to gain the regards of Zainab alayhi salam. Or then went into the battle. Some say he killed 40 soldiers of the enemy. Some say up to 200 soldiers of the enemies. But as he killed more enemies began to attack him. They began to attack him all at once. Every companion of the holy Imam, when they went